You're listening to the HE Knowledge Hub, brought to you by Next Step Southwest, or NSSW. Our mission is to offer you impartial information and signposting on various HE-related issues, so you can make an informed decision about HE that's right for you. You can find out more about our events and resources online at nextstepssw.ac.uk. Welcome to a very special edition of the HE Knowledge Hub podcast. In this edition, we're handing over the reins to our student reporters. To set the scene, this year St Ives in Cornwall is hosting the 2021 G7 Summit, and the Future Leaders Network proudly hosted the Y7 Summit in May. Youth delegates from across the G7 nations presented their recommendations to the government, advising on how they can ensure young people's voices are heard. Our student reporters have had the unique online work experience opportunity to meet the Y7, and this podcast is the result.
Hello, listeners.
We are students representing Foy River Academy.
We have been working with Next Step Southwest.
In this podcast, we will talk about the current G7 summit taking place at Carbis Bay in Cornwall.
We interviewed five people who are influential in the current climate crisis and the G7 summit.
We have created this podcast to research facts, raise awareness, and inform other young people about the current global crisis.
We hope you enjoy listening to this as much as we have enjoyed creating it.
Let's hear from Dr. Natalia Ernstman from Plymouth College of Arts.
How do you artistically connect with children and families to educate them about eco-anxiety?
So I can give you an example of a project that I did 3 years ago, where I created a camp in Cornwall, and we invited whole families to join us and talk about climate change. So the camp was sort of imagined as a refugee camp. And before the families came, they got a video message saying that their village was going to be flooded and they had to evacuate. So they came in as refugee families, and the camp that we created was like a holding camp. So they arrived and they had to set up sort of a camp with their tents. And then the whole weekend, we did different kind of activities and creative activities, lots of making and building structures and a bit of theater to really allow these families to talk together what they think about climate change, how they feel about it, and that if they were faced with a situation where they had to flee, what they would take, for example, what they would change in their lives. So I guess my reply to your question is to allow young people, but also adults, to face up to the severity of the situation, but then also help them to come up with solutions and things that they can do in their lives at that very moment that give them agency rather than just feeling completely hopeless and tragic about it, because that's not going to help us and it's not going to help anyone, is it? So we can't deny that the situation is really bad and that we're going to face some really hard struggles in the future, but that doesn't mean that as people, and especially as young people as you are, that there's nowhere for you to go. And I think that's where eco-anxiety can turn into actually a real feeling of power, and that you have the power to make a change and that you can face up to these problems. Does that answer your question?
Yes, yeah, it does. Thank
Great.
You.
Next, let's hear from the man behind 365 Swim, Chris Thomas.
Do you think G7 could learn about how to preserve and fortify mental health in their communities through the 365-day swim?
Absolutely. I think the community aspect of the 365 is what really helps people, because a lot of people suffer mental health in silence, and they don't necessarily talk about it. Or if they do talk about it, they talk about it to maybe a medical professional. And sometimes it helps to just talk to their peers and talk to other people and understand that other people might be experiencing similar mental health issues, because mental health issues don't have to be big issues. They can be very small issues that sort of create doubts and anxieties within people's minds. So if you can share those with like-minded people that have got a common sort of hobby, i.e. wild swimming, sea swimming, free diving, whatever it might be, even just dipping your toes in for half an hour and having a yarn with someone can really make a difference to someone's sort of day, mental health-wise.
Anna Harris also joined us. She is the co-chair of the Y7 Implementation Task Force.
Is it with more of our generation in protests about climate change, do you think that more people should listen to our voices?
Absolutely, yeah. I think climate change is a really good example of ways that young people have made a real hullabaloo and people and have made a change. Like, everybody knows who Greta Thunberg is. She's become an absolute icon. And I do think has really brought the issue to the forefront of people's minds. I think there's probably two things to say on this one, which I'd like to change a bit. It's probably, I think climate change is vital and needs and should be at the forefront of everybody's minds. But I do think that young people actually also have a view on lots of other things and should do, because we inherit the outcomes of the decisions that are made today, tomorrow. And I think actually kind of we get left out of other debates, and the focus can sometimes be a bit too strongly on climate change, I think. And actually there's so many links between so many different policy issues that aren't explored. And that's why the Y7 really likes the idea of futures thinking, which is about seeing the connections between lots of different issues and taking a more holistic view on things. So I would say that I would like us to, as a kind of a youth movement, to move more into that space. And then the other thing is around protesting. I think protesting gets a really bad name, and I don't think it should. I think it's, in the past, it has been why so many really positive things have happened. And protesting is kind of the, what is it? I can't remember the quote, but there's a quote around it being like the voice of the silenced or something along those lines. I don't know whether anybody knows what it is. But I also think that that young people, if they were allowed into more circles, so if there was like a youth advisory board, for instance, so for instance, the Y7 this year wants there to be a youth advisory board on artificial intelligence. And if more kind of bodies and organisations like that existed, we would have more methods to kind of create change, and we wouldn't just be limited to one.
How have you sort of created change, especially in your environment, to that fit the morals of the G7's aims?
So I suppose if you think about what the G7 was set out to do, the ethos of the G7 is it's the most advanced economies in the world, which is now potentially debatable whether or not that is still the case. But one of the core things that the G7 countries have in common is supposedly democratic values. And I think that's something that the Y7 and my work with the Y7 definitely tries to kind of work with and ensure that young people feel that democracy is something worth engaging in and that they feel included in decision-making processes. So I suppose that is a way that we're aligned with the G7's morals. And there's going to be a really interesting report that the Y7 carried out, which was on how persuaded young people are by democracy. And I've got one of the facts here, which is quite striking, actually. So 71% of young people were satisfied with the functioning of democracy in 2007. And that is now 56% of young people in 2020. So it's a really stark difference of how listened to people now feel. And that is something that we are trying to change.
Rachele De Angelis is the Y7 chair for Italy.
Have any of your aims or viewpoints changed throughout your career?
Yeah, definitely. Also, this kind of thing that I mentioned to you before of biodiversity loss, natural capital, this is not something where I was much, not interested because it wasn't, simply because maybe I didn't have the chance to really look at it. And then after my first experience that I had at OECD, where I had the occasion to delve into this issue a little bit more, I also started seeing how important this issue is and how related also to other environmental crises we are it is. And so also personally, I started growing my interest in it. So I also tended to be a little bit more afraid when I changed my mind, when I saw something that interested me, because I was like, okay, so maybe am I losing my focus on what I'm doing? Actually, then you realize that there are several things that can go together, and that if you're curious about something, there's nothing to be afraid of.
Next up is Bran from the Eden Project.
Hello, my name is James.
I'm Freddie Rose.
I'm Roy Williams.
I'm a student at Fuller River Academy. My colleagues and I are very concerned about the environment that my generation, as well as ones to come, will grow up in, and how the G7 may affect that. I've been to Eden countless times. It's an amazing project, but can you please tell us a bit more about what you do and how it can help?
I work in the schools team. Obviously, I think that's the most important job there is at Eden. And I think the most important thing we do at Eden is we kind of introduce environmental issues at a sort of entry level. You know, we like to make people think we're serious or nerdy environmentalists, accuse us of being flippant and taking it not seriously enough and all that kind of stuff. But I think that's our strength. You know, people come and they have a nice time and they go away and they'll remember a few things. Hopefully they'll remember that actually, you know, we are, as human beings, capable of doing positive things as well as negative things, because you only ever hear about the negative things, especially on the news and on, you know, a lot of Facebook posts and stuff. And actually, we're here to say, no, people are pretty cool. We can do great things as well as, you know, the destructive stuff. And it's up to us to make that choice. And I think that's probably one of the best messages, you know, this environmental stuff. We should be looking to make a planet that is safe, sustainable, fun, friendly, and all those things. I mean, what's the point of saving the planet if we're all going to sit around being bored on it? So I think that's the best message that we have. When we, as a schools team, we teach, before the pandemic, we had like 50,000 students a year come to visit and get to do workshops. And we go out to work all over the world with other students, especially online nowadays. And I think just encouraging young people to follow their heart and follow their dreams, and showing them examples of other young people doing great stuff and making positive changes is one of the most important things we do. I wouldn't say that because I'm a teacher and a youth worker, but, you know, I really believe that, it's not about saying, you know, here's the planet, off you go, good luck, young people, because that's really just unfair and grossly sort of inadequate as far as adults are concerned. But I do think that we should be pointing out to young people that although we've made mistakes, there are a lot of really positive things we can do as well. And actually, there are lots of young people out there doing some amazing stuff, which isn't talked about enough.
Educating and motivating is probably one of the most important things you can do for a child. I'm glad for the people who've done that in my life.
More now from Rakali DeAngelis.
Some people our age still don't know what they want to achieve when they leave school. Have you always been interested in sustainability, and what inspired you to get into green growth and development?
So, yeah, I have to be honest, this was not the path that I was imagining when I started university. It was something that I've always been interested in, and I'm not afraid in saying that when I was a child also. I used to run small campaigns in the village where I used to spend my summertime with my friends. That's absolutely true. So I started absorbing also these environmental instances that started growing around me, but then, to be honest, I kind of didn't think to make it my career when I entered university. But what I also think is that when you have some inner passions, they tend to then come up when you grow older, and sometimes this can happen very surprisingly to you. So I've always been very interested also in the political side of it, so how to manage a sustainable growth and to make it also inclusive, so, you know, taking also into consideration other parameters. So I kind of was able to also choose some courses inside my university such that I could also be more prepared for that. And then I actually grabbed an opportunity inside the OECD last year, where I started working for the environment directorate. So once you were there, you know, you started to be interested in those topics, and you know, then also for these types of opportunities that came afterwards, like at the G7, I was able to tailor, let's say, my profile more in that. I do think that is important also as a message for young people to really, it is not rhetoric. It is really do what you think you can give the most of yourself in. Also, and you will see this because really when you are a worker also or a researcher or whatever you want to do, or even a student at the beginning, you tend to give more to the things where you feel the most yourself in. So this is very important. It's important for you as a student or as a worker, but also for your future professors or recruiters, because they do feel this passion, and so you will tend to be a better candidate and a better worker. I can truly assure you this.
Let's get back to Dr. Natalia Ernstman from Plymouth College of Arts.
As the younger generation, how would you advise us to learn more about how we can save our planet?
By using your voice and seeing yourself as leaders, especially, you know, looking at girls. There's some really amazing, obviously, sort of lead figures, not just Greta Thunberg, but there's a couple of girls from the Amazonian rainforest that are completely standing up for their families and their populations. So it's about, you know, you have an immensely creative minds. At the moment, the way your brains are developing and how many connections you're making really allows you to be really creative and out of the box. Whereas we adults kind of get stuck in one way of thinking and one way of doing things. So use that potential, you know, and make sure that people hear about the ideas that you have and that you really care about the planet and that there are certain ways that you just disagree with. So finding these channels and finding ways to make that voice heard, I think, is really important for you.
We wanted to talk more about the Y7 with Rakali DeAngelis.
The Y7 has given young people a platform to voice their opinions. What do you personally want to achieve by being part of this?
Inside the Y7, we were also given the not the chance in itself, but like also the opportunity to also, for being a better candidate, better delegate, sorry, to also listen from our, let's say, the young cohorts inside our nations. So one of the things that I enjoyed the most was also to listening to the different instances of young people. And so one of the things that I also asked the Y7 then as a process was also to make this voice as being heard in the best way possible. And one of the things that we did was also to listen to the little NGOs or organizations that are very local, because in this way I really had the impression to be the closest possible to some communities that you know, were looking at the Y7 as something that was really really as a major opportunity for them to be, you know, inside also this negotiation. So I can say that for me the Y7 was also a way to give voice also to them, and in the case of climate and environment, this was extremely useful, because also initially, but I saw it a lot also in the UK, it's really plenty of small organizations also run by students or young workers that are trying to make their voice heard in terms of, you know, how to better manage their environmental landscape. You're in Cornwall, so as you were saying, you're pretty aware of all of this. But the same really happens in Italian coast or also inside in the landscape, in the countryside. So it was good also to, you know, to bring my contribution for them all.
We asked Chris Thomas from the 365 Swim about the oceans and fishing.
What would you like to see G7 do around Cornwall about overfishing?
It's a really difficult subject because obviously trawler men and fishermen, it's their industry and it's their trade, their, you know, it's where they get their money from, it's how they sort of keep their families and survive. But that said, it's a very evasive form of, you know, gaining food, ultimately. And they're fishing wildlife. They're not fishing farmed animals. You know, there's no sort of industrial line of fish that are being replaced. They're wild fish, they're wild animals that are being taken from their environment and sold ultimately to make money to people who eat them. So that's, I do have an issue with that, because I think the stealing wildlife for money is not really acceptable, in my opinion. And I know the industry is big, and I know it's probably so big that it sort of deflects any negative sort of press that it gets quite comfortably, because it's a multi-billion pound industry. But it needs to change. You know, it's not only impacting wildlife, it's impacting, you know, the ecosystems of the oceans. You know, sharks and sort of big fish of that nature, you know, sharks, tuna, they're almost being fished to extinction, which is, in my mind, insane that anyone would go to that length just to put a fin in a soup. I find that incredible. You know, that is just mind-blowing. But that's the reality of it. You know, they're going to fish that species to death just to put it in soup. Unreal.
Now, a big question for Brandt from the Eden Project.
As an individual, what advice can you give to me about how I can support my local environment?
Of course, that's another big question. Well, we're all different, you know. Everybody's got different skills and opportunities, and everybody's got different passions. You know, so you've got to do something you enjoy, you know, and something that you feel is important. I'm not copping out here, because I really believe, you know, there's no point in sort of doing things that you aren't happy with. And I often think I do environmental stuff because it makes me feel better. You know, I can stand up at the end of the day and go, yeah, you know, I've made, I've made a difference in an area that I care about. And so I don't think, you know, we should be talking about, you know, great big sort of giant life-changing events. I mean, maybe we could, but I think the sort of little things that, you know, we all can do are really, really important. They're often underestimated because people don't sort of rate them because they're only little things. But actually, little things are really important for you as well as the environment. So looking after yourself is probably the most important thing, you know, making sure that you're happy with the way you live your life and the direction that you're going. And if that you look after that, then you're, by virtue of sort of doing that, you're going to be looking after other people and the world that you live in.
Anna Harris also joined us. She is the co-chair of the Y7 Implementation Task Force.
Do you believe that hosting the G7 Summit in Cornwall will create more recognition in the general public of having a more eco-friendly environment?
Maybe. I can see what the thought process is behind it, in that I think when you look at images of Cornwall and kind of the rolling hills and the beaches and the sea and that kind of thing, it does definitely ignite a real, it shows you how great nature can be and the importance of protecting it. So I think even that imagery is actually quite helpful in terms of being eco-friendly. And I think it also chimes quite well with the focus on oceans and that kind of thing, which yeah. I think the G7 is really interested in, and also COP26, which is coming up in September in Glasgow. I think the biggest thing, though, is going to be the recommendations that come out of it, right, and how bold they are, and seeing what they say. And I'm hoping that they're ambitious, and I know there's a lot of passion from young people, particularly for them to be ambitious, so we'll have to see.
More now from Rakali DeAngelis.
In Cornwall, we've started to see more frequent storms, and there's concern about sea level rise as we're surrounded by coastline. However, we know that climate change does not affect everyone equally. In your experience, who are the people most likely to see the consequences of this?
Yeah, the problem of, especially of, let's say in general, we tend to talk about climate change, but actually I prefer talking about environmental crisis in plural, because there are several. I'm much concerned, for example, of the one of natural, of the loss of natural capital and of biodiversity, which tends to be separate from climate change. Actually, they two are much intertwined, also because climate change is also one of the causes of biodiversity loss, and in general, biodiversity preservation could also have biodiversity. Climate change. So you know, there are a lot of intertwined, and but what happens is that there is something that all these crises have in common, that they tend to exacerbate, not only replicate, but exacerbate global inequalities. And that's incredible, because you tend to have this kind of global north and south, as they are mentioned, they tend to be even exacerbated because climate change, for example, the increase of global temperature tends to affect, of course, a continent like Africa, and there are some territories in Africa that are simply not inhabitable anymore, which means that people will tend to emigrate. And there's something very natural, because simply those territories are not able to host other people. And at the same time, then you have a global north, like, for example, continental Europe, that is, of course, one of the wealthiest areas in the world, where, you know, that little increase in temperature could even help a little bit living in a better patterns of, you know, everyday life, but also for agriculture, this can be also a little bit better to have some degrees more. So you see, you tend to have two very different pictures from the same from the same phenomenon. It's not rhetoric to see that really that there are some vulnerable people of today and of 20 years ago that would be even more vulnerable with the same with this phenomenon that we are seeing in the environment.
As representatives of the children of Cornwall and the protectors of the planet's future, we would like you to prioritise the necessity of having a cleaner and sustainable planet.
What actions are you taking to push this so that it raises awareness of this to the public?
What actions are you creating to provide solutions, not false promises, of a more sustainable way of life?
We need to be praised for our contributions to help the planet, which will encourage a sustainable mindset.
We want to be informed about the steps our government is taking towards this crisis. Where is your action plan?
We want you to do what's right, not what's easy.
Thank you to our student reporters and those who've supported the production of this podcast, namely Bauer Media, Cornwall Council, the Future Leaders Network, and to the interviewees and the Y7 delegates themselves. You can listen to more HE Knowledge Hub podcasts on our website, nextstepssw.ac.uk, as well as finding us on Spotify. And you can join the conversation about the G7 and Y7 online via #makingwaves for #futuregenerations. You can discover more about Next Steps Southwest by searching at Next Steps SW.